The Capital Investment Committee for February 21st is called to order. In the interest of time, members, we're going to get going. Hopefully, we get through the presentation. I really appreciate just having a heads up on what the materials. And so for members, you know, feel free to let me know if you have questions along the way so that we can ask. And if we don't get through the presentation today, we'll work with MMB and the respective agencies to have them come back and present to us. And so with that, I'll turn it over to Director and then your first colleague. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Great. Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Lee, Vice Chair Ryer, Leader Erdahl, and members. For the record, my name is Micah Intermill, and I'm the state's Enterprise Director for Federal Funds Implementation, housed out of MMB. I appreciate the opportunity to join you today, along with colleagues from across the enterprise, to continue the conversation we started on Monday regarding the state's activity under the federal investment bills, those being the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, Inflation Reduction Act, and CHIPS and Science Act. Today's conversation will be focused entirely on the IIJA, and more specifically, it will focus on transportation-related funding categories, which, as a reminder, represent over 75% of total IIJA funding opportunities for the state enterprise. Our goal today is to cover the first seven categories listed on the slide, starting with airports and ending with a discussion of safety programs. I'll be back next Monday with additional colleagues to discuss the remaining categories listed. As a reminder, the total amount of projected IIJA funding for Minnesota as an enterprise is approximately $9.7 billion. This includes both the announced competitive awards as well as the calculated formula distributions, as reported by federal funds information for states. Due to federal appropriations processes, actual awards received by the state will be slightly less than the amount shown on this slide. And you'll hear more from that from my MnDOT colleagues later in our presentation. The fact remains, Minnesota is doing very well in the area of competitive awards, and you'll hear more on that today. The efforts of individuals across state agencies mean significant work is and will be delivered in all corners of Minnesota. In addition, as I may not have been clear in my presentation on Monday, these numbers largely do not include awards received directly by local units, as that data is not centrally available. My team is working on compiling that data and will be sharing that both on the updated IIJA award tracker on MMB's website and with the committee directly when it's available. That concludes my brief orientation to today's topic, and we will now move on to our category-by-category review, starting with Airports and Federal Aviation Administration Facilities.
So, Director, thank you, Dr. Ansermo. Before you start, Director Becker, for members, again, for those that just came in, feel free to let me know if you have questions along the way as we will go through this. And then for Director Becker and for the other MnDOT staff, I do have some questions that I have. I just wanted to let you know right now, and I would like these covered, and then we'll forward this for the other colleagues coming in the other day. So I would like for you to touch on, through your presentation, how much fund have been secured to date, how much have been spent to date, what are the projects that these have been spent on, what is the role of the state with these funds, and then for the formula funds, how are these going to be administered and dispersed? And then for the competitive funds, how are these going to be administered and dispersed? With that, go ahead, Director Becker.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
Just to clarify, are questions going to be permitted after each presentation, or do we wait till everyone's done?
We could go along the way. If you have questions during the presentation, just let us know. Yep. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Kirby Becker, Assistant Office Director for MnDOT's Office of Aeronautics. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity here to speak today. When IIJA was signed into law, $20 billion was included for airports through FAA. $15 billion of that is for airport infrastructure grants, while $5 billion is for airport terminal program projects. AIG funding is allocated to the FAA and subsequently to federal eligible airports as dedicated entitlements, while ATP funding is competitive and discretionary. IIJA allocated $289 million in AIG funding to Minnesota.
ATP funds, on the other hand, are awarded annually through a competitive notice of funding opportunity, a NOFO. To date, Minnesota airports have received more than $65 million in competitive ATP project awards. Each year, FAA allocates approximately $60 million in AIG funding to eligible federal airport sponsors through a formula. Minnesota has 96 airports that are federally eligible of the 133 in the state. To date, Minnesota has programmed and written into grant 49 AIG projects totaling $60.5 million in federal AIG funds. These projects have approximately $4.8 million of state IIJA matching funds allocated towards them. On the slide, you'll see three examples of those AIG projects. There's numerous, so 96 airports, there's too many to list on one slide, so we picked three really good examples for you today. ATP grants, like AIG, focus on funding safe, sustainable, and accessible projects, specifically at airport terminals. In federal fiscal year 22, Minnesota was awarded more than $23 million in ATP funds. In federal fiscal year 23, Minnesota was awarded more than $11 million in ATP funds. And in federal fiscal year 24, Minnesota was awarded more than $31 million in ATP funds. The 2024 awards were just announced last week. The nine ATP project awards that you see on the screen in the PowerPoint for the 3 years, 22 through 24, total more than $65 million in federal ATP funds. These projects have approximately $3.5 million in state IIJA matching funds allocated towards them. The benefits of AIG and ATP-funded projects include better passenger experience, greater sustainability, improved safety, increased accessibility, and expanded capacity. We are certain that one or more of the Minnesota airports will submit projects for ATP funding for federal fiscal years 25 and 26. It's unclear what those airports or projects will be. For an example, the MSP airport has a $100 million project that they recently received $20 million on in ATP funds. I'm pretty sure that they will submit another application for 25 and 26, hoping to get awarded the difference of $80 million. Federally eligible airports will also have two additional years of federal AIG allocations to use on projects in the same federal fiscal years. As far as challenges and opportunities, Minnesota is a Channeling Act state, and airport sponsors work directly with FAA on AIG or ATP project requests. This can be a challenge when communicating and coordinating on federally funded projects to ensure MnDOT is aware of federal requests and state match needs. As a result, to ensure appropriate lines of communication and coordination, MnDOT, Aeronautics leadership, and FAA meet quarterly to discuss airport projects, and monthly with FAA and mid-sized to larger airports to discuss their capital investment programs and those projects associated with those programs. Additionally, airports that are federally eligible do have the opportunity to use multiple years of AIG allocated funds on larger, higher cost projects. Thank you.
So, Director Becker, of the $355 million of the projected allocation, can you talk about how much of that has been secured today and how much have been spent today?
Chair Lee, can you please read?
On page 5 of your presentation, you said that $355 million in projected IIJA allocations and awards to Minnesota. And so of that $355, I want to know how much have been actually secured and been spent and how much are still anticipated.
To date, there are 49 Chair Lee, there are 49 grants that are currently written through the FAA, obligating $60.5 million of the $289 million that's allocated to the state of Minnesota.
And then can you talk a little bit more around the line item formula and competitive? How are these going to be administered and dispersed? Do they already have projects in hand for these amounts, or what is the process for us?
All of the 96 airports that are federally eligible have capital improvement programs that they work directly with FAA and subsequently MnDOT to identify projects over the next 5 years. I would say the majority of their entitlements, the allocated funds of AIG, are committed or identified for projects. They just haven't been secured in federal grants.
And so can, maybe not for right now, but for a follow-up, for example, the Duluth Airport is asking us for funding. Does the Duluth Airport, I know that they did receive, I think, the ATP, some funding from the ATP program. Is the Duluth Airport included in the formula grant and then the competitive grant too then, or are they outside of this?
Chair Lee, so the ATP grant that Duluth recently received was a discretionary competitive grant. They do also receive AIG funding, like the other 95 federally eligible airports. I don't know that amount offhand, what they receive in each federal fiscal year, but I can get back to you on that.
Okay. Yeah, and so I think, for the other MnDOT staff, this is the specificity that I would like to get into, actually digging into each line items with the numbers that you have. I want to know quite possibly where this is going to go, to the extent that you can explain that, and if it is going towards any projects that are coming to request state dollars from us so that we know that. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Director Becker. I'm not sure I caught where in the 24 cycle, what was going on at MSP. I don't know if you could speak to that quickly.
Director Becker.
Yes. In the recent awards for ATP funding, which is a discretionary and competitive program, recently awarded the projects for federal fiscal year 24 for Minnesota, and I believe that total was $31 million. And of that, Duluth received a $10 million ATP grant in federal fiscal year 24.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought it showed MSP Airport was getting some money in the 24, but I don't think you had the screen that I saw showed what it was going towards. You had others that were going through the G concourse and some other projects, but maybe it's just continuation of the G or new gates. I just wanted a little more clarification.
So Director Becker, on page 7, under awarded fiscal year 24 projects, MSP was noted with $20 million. I think Chair Lilly is asking about what that $20 million is going to be spent on.
Chair Lee, I can get back to you on the details of that project. It was just released at the end of last week, so I can
find a
project description and get that back information to you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you mentioned federally eligible airports, so I'm just checking, is Fleming Field in South St. Paul a federally eligible airport to receive grants?
South St. Paul Airport is a federally eligible airport.
Thank you.
Seeing no other questions on this piece, thank you, Director Becker. Next, we have Director Dahman from MnDOT to present on electric vehicle buses and ferries. Welcome, Director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair, members. My name is Amber Dahman. I am the Director of the Office of Sustainability and Public Health with the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And I'm going to share with you briefly some of the things that we have going on regarding electric vehicles primarily. And you can see on the slide that some of the federal funding also includes buses and ferries. What I'll note or point out regarding buses is that Clean School Bus Program is currently administered by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and is not something that the MnDOT is responsible for. We are responsible for administering the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure, or otherwise known as NEVI Formula Program, which you can see on your right side is the approximately $68 million in federal funds in the state of Minnesota. There are some discretionary competitive programs related to charging and fueling infrastructure, and I'll give a brief update of what we're aware of regarding those two programs. And then the other thing that I'll note is that there are some other programs, federal programs, regarding electric vehicle charger reliability and accessibility, and we are aware of like a community that has been awarded for that. The other thing that I'll just throw in here right now is this is primarily talking about electric vehicles through the Federal Highway Administration. The Low-No Bus Emissions Program, discretionary program, is something that our Office of Transit and Active Transportation will be covering later on in the presentation. So, on this particular slide, you can see that MnDOT is responsible for carrying out the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Funding, which is helping to build out a fast charging network throughout the state. We're starting with our first two designated alternative fuel corridors, which are I-35 and I-94, which show up as green. They may look a little washed out on this slide for you, but those two corridors. And we currently, last session, the legislature also provided $13.6 million in state funds to provide some of the non-federal match that's required for this federal program. And the initial funding charging stations will be about 18 of them along these two corridors. We closed our request for proposals earlier this month in February, and we got we did get 38 applications for those 18 potential charging locations. We're hoping to notify successful applicants later this year after we review their proposals. So some of the benefits related to this program, we know that investments in fast charging are one way that we can support reducing transport or carbon pollution from the transportation sector. We also know that for trips that aren't able to be made by walking or biking or transit, that electric vehicles offer people in Minnesota benefits like lower maintenance costs if they own an electric vehicle, cleaner air, as well as economic development opportunities throughout the state. Okay, and then that's a summary of where we're at with the formula program, the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program. Regarding the discretionary or competitive programs, these are charging and fueling infrastructure. One thing that I will note is that we did submit an application as an agency for $8 million for Greater Minnesota, our Office of Transit and Active Transportation submitted this application with a project that was intended to cover planning and outreach for electric vehicle charging, focusing on rural and underserved communities where there may be gaps within the network, as well as shared mobility projects and electric vehicle fleets. That's also the intent of this particular program. The one thing that we aren't able to track closely is how many communities may be submitting applications on their own and are not funded. We know that no communities throughout the state were successful in receiving these funds. We are aware of a couple that did submit applications. We suspect some of the challenges regarding why they may not be receiving funds is that it is highly competitive. There were over 300 applications that were received for this particular pot of funding. It seems that with this source of funding, they want to make sure that there's a high level of community engagement from the communities that are submitting these applications, and that project readiness is a really important factor for many of the applicants. And so if they don't have things figured out upon submitting these applications, they're less likely to be successful in securing these funds. One of the things that we're working on as an agency to help address this need is we're about to enter into a process where we're doing a statewide needs assessment for what the actual needs are for electric vehicle infrastructure throughout the state, and that is going to help us understand some of the opportunities or challenges where infrastructure is needed and the type of utilities that are there to support that process.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier. How many charging stations do we have in Minnesota now? Do you have any idea?
Director Dahlman.
Thank you, Chair and Representative. I do not have that information offhand, and that's something we can certainly get back to you on.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, a good piece of information to know if you could get that to us.
Yes.
But also, looking long-term, to accommodate the transportation needs of Minnesota, how many charging stations are going to be needed?
Director Dahlman.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. That's a part of what we're hoping that needs assessment that I referenced earlier is going to help us understand and get a clearer picture of the amount of infrastructure that's going to be needed for charging in the future.
Representative?
Thank you. And, well, those are two pieces of information that I've asked that I think are, you know, very important for us to know. So at your earliest convenience, please convey that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, when I look, I've looked at maps of where the EV charging stations are in Minnesota, and there seem to be some gaps. And those gaps are in the first tier and second tier suburbs. They're in the East Metro. They're in poor communities. They're in areas where there are environmental justice needs. And we continue to see the administration apply for grants for Greater Minnesota. So I'd like to know how come there are not grant applications for the underserved communities in the metropolitan area.
Director Dahlman.
Thank you, Representative Chair. The Metropolitan Council submits applications on behalf of the Twin Cities area as a part of the MPO. I believe they did submit an application for one of the charging and fueling infrastructure. I'm not familiar with the details of that particular application, other than to say that it was not successful.
Representative Hansen, the Met Council will be here too. So you can ask them. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, and I think this is a broader issue than just one agency because with the PCA and the VW settlement, those dollars for EV charging stations also went to Greater Minnesota. So the net effect, whether whichever agencies there are, there seems to be a gap in the first and second tier suburbs and in the East Metro.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Thank you, Director. Next up, we have Director Meyer from MnDOT to talk about passenger and freight route. Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair, Representatives. My name is Shelley Meyer. I'm the Director of the Office of Freight and Commercial Vehicle Operations, and I'm here to speak about the freight and passenger rail, as well as the ports and waterways areas of our office. So what we have up here right now is to the IIJA funds that we received $11.6 in competitive funds, $2.6 in consolidated rail infrastructure and safety improvement CRISI funds, corridor identification and development program, a $500,000 award with that, and then the rail grade crossing elimination program, we received $8.5 million. The three competitive RCE projects that we received, one was for MnDOT and two were for our partners. Both partner projects were awarded state fund or state match funds. The expanded benefits of this is that MnDOT Hinckley's study will look to improve safety under current conditions with a focus on freight movement with an eye toward passenger rail. So there's a side benefit to this study. The RFP has not been published yet, but it will be published soon to hire a consultant for that study. The reason that the Hinckley corridor was chosen is that ranked highest per the grade crossing safety action plan, and it just is coincidental that it lines up with NLX, the Northern Lights Express. Some crossings have safety concerns at current speeds and will not be safe at a higher speed, hence the reason to study that. The study will accomplish some of the legwork for crossing elimination and improvements for the passenger corridor by improving crossing safety at current speeds before passenger service eventually increases speeds. The two competitive CRISI projects, one was for the TC&W project, will convert 12.2 miles of TC&W mainline track to continuous welded rail. That's probably a little bit more technical than we need to go on. And the Midwest MVRA project includes project development plan and activities for upgrading a 40-mile section of rail to increase speeds to 25 miles per hour. The expanded benefit is to allow for more efficient and safer operation along these corridors and to allow more access for local industry to ship via rail and to connect with Class I railroads. The passenger rail projects, we did receive that $500,000 corridor identification and planning grant. This is a new discretionary program established by IIJA to fund project planning development for intercity passenger rail corridors. Let's see, the goal is to create a prioritized pipeline for future funding. The idea here is that the $500,000 will allow us to do phase one. There's three steps to the CIDP program. We're embarking on the first part by hiring a consultant to help us do part one, and then we'll seek future funding for part two and part three. We're told that by getting into the CIDP program and doing that work, that it aligns us better for future federal-state partnership grant that we had applied for before, but we did not receive this last go around. I guess that's, yeah, we can go into this. Let's see. Okay, so the future opportunities, we've identified two west-to-east coast corridors for future opportunities as presented to the core team based on Grade Crossing Action Plan. BNSF, Staples to Brainerd, between Fargo and Duluth, and then CPKC from Tracy to Winona. Those are two opportunities that we're looking at. With Chrissy, we're not going to be applying for that, but we will plan to support our local partners moving forward with that. For passenger rail, MnDOT will continue to pursue IIJ funding. As I mentioned before, that we are slotted to apply this next go-around for the federal state partnership grant. Once we hear about the NOFO, that will come out. TCMC, better known as the second train to Chicago, we will apply for a second restoration and enhancement grant to take full advantage of the program under IIJA. The existing grant is a pre-IIJA grant. And the partners that we're working with are Wisconsin DOT and Illinois DOT and Amtrak. Let's see. And as I mentioned before, we'll apply for future corridor identification grants, funding for the final design and construction. We'll need to complete corridor identification program to improve odds of funding. We may need to apply to multiple programs at the same time. MnDOT will pursue funding additional corridor identification grants for other routes as we learn about those.
So, Director, to what extent can you talk about if any of the programs that we have funded around passenger and freight rail within the bonding bill, does it fit into any of these funding avenues from the feds?
I'm sorry, Chair, what was that?
So we have funded rails and previous bonding bills before, and so to what extent are there overlaps between those programs from MnDOT that we have funded and some of the federal funding? Are there any overlaps at all or not?
I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that question right now, but we will get back to you.
Okay. And then just real quickly to the Railroad Crossing Elimination Program, how do a local community or so apply for this, and to what extent will they work with MnDOT to apply for this program? I see that when you talked about the Hinckley Corridor Grade Crossing funding, you mentioned an action plan. What action plan was you referring to?
It is a grade crossing, statewide grade crossing safety action plan. As far as how often those are performed, I don't know that answer at this time. I can get back to you. As far as applying for for grade crossing elimination, as if you're saying that the locals applying. Chair, I also don't have the answer to that, but we will get back to you with that information.
Okay, thank you. Seeing no other question on this one, thank you very much, Director.
Thank you, Chair.
Next, we have Director Meyer from MnDOT to talk.
That's me. Chair.
Oh, that's you again. Okay, sorry. Go ahead. Proceed with Ports and Waterways.
Thank you, Chair. With the Ports and Waterways, there have been two competitive port infrastructure projects applied for by port authorities. Both projects are also supplemented with Port Development Assistance Program funding that state funds. The benefits to these is that these funds support river infrastructure projects that help maintain and improve the ability of shippers to move goods and in the cheapest and most environmentally friendly way. They also support activities that help keep the navigation channel open to river traffic. The Wabasha project specifically is a materially different way. Let's see, the IIJA Port Infrastructure Development Funds are used as or supplemented for match funds for local partners that need to provide for or that need the funding to help augment the Port Development Assistance Program funding. PDAP funds are and can be leveraged to acquire federal port infrastructure development funds. The formula funds, I think we can go back, yeah. The ferry funds are formula funds from FHWA. We received $16 million. There's $60 million available over 4 years. They're due to expire at the end of 2026. The Hat Point Ferry Terminal in Grand Portage is the only eligible operation in the state that qualified for those funds. We don't know of any other eligible terminals that would qualify for that. The monies are transferred to the Bureau of Indian Affairs to distribute to the Grand Portage Band of Chippewa as eligible projects arise, and BIA is overseeing and administering that. Currently, there have been $2.1 million of this $60 million pot transferred via MnDOT for this terminal rebuild. They've also received $3.2 million from economic development. And while MnDOT is not actively pursuing anything with respect to the ports, we will continue to support our partners as their needs arise.
Thank you, Director. So regarding the ports, of the $18 million that was appropriated last year, how does that work? How does that tie into this 4.5 that was secured for these two projects?
Chair, there are seven ports that received that $18 million. St. Paul Port Authority received $4 million. St. Paul Port Authority received $4.8 million for two different projects. Duluth Seaway Port Authority received $7.57 million. Red Wing received $900,000 for one of their projects and $1.7 million for another one of their projects. Wabasha Port Authority received $890,000 for one of their projects, and then Port Authority of Winona received $2.2 million. Some of these projects will do is use some of the PDAP money to offset some of the federal money that they also receive.
And so is it safe to say that the 4.5 is on top of the $18 million that was appropriated then?
I'm sorry, Chair, I don't have the answer to that question. I can get back to you on that.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Ms. Chair and Director Meyer. On construction of ferry boats and ferry terminal facilities, how many ferry boats do we have now, and how many are being constructed?
Director.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. I don't know how many ferries we have available, but I do know that there's this one that's privately owned that some of this funding is going toward. But I don't have an answer to that question at this time.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Director Meyer. Does the ferry run to Isle Royale, or where do these ferries run?
Director.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. I don't know.
Representative.
I will have to get back to you on that one.
I'm not having much luck today.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Director.
So I think just to underscore that this is a formula program, not a competitive program that the state applied for. So the state's truly just administering these federal dollars. And if I understood the director correctly, the formula allocation is likely greater than what the one eligible terminal will be using.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. Director, this is in my district, and what happened was the U.S. Coast Guard left. There's no one there. Grand Portage is trying to set up a port so that they can get three Coast Guard vehicles to do safety and everything out of there. And where it is, I do not know, so I can't answer any of these questions. I just know that that's the urgency right now, because from Duluth, that's where they have to come from, Duluth, which is a long ways, and we don't know why they left, and it's on Homeland Security. There's the pot just gets bigger. The more I get involved in this, the more I'm like, wow, it's big. But we're trying to solve it for people up there, and we'll see what happens. But I know. I think Chair, you had said someone had made a comment. $3 million was indeed, and that was for trying to get that set up, that part. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Whatever. Thank you, Representative Strava. I see no other questions. Thank you, Director Meyer.
Thank you.
Next up, for public transportation, we have Deputy General Manager Nick Thompson from the Met Council and the Director Gondor, sorry if I mispronounced your name, from MnDOT.
And Mr. Chair, I'll provide just the brief overview and the grounding, and then turn the table over to the experts. As a recap on your slides, $91.9 billion in total available under the IIJA for states. Of that, we see $1.2 billion currently in projected IIJA allocations and awards to the state of Minnesota, roughly $300 million of that coming from competitive awards and $900 million from formula awards. And I will hand it over.
Yeah, before you start, just want to, acknowledge just the maybe jumping ahead on the presentation. I think it will be helpful for us as we have these conversation on how I think this was break down, funding amount, and then what is the funding remaining for us so that we know, so that we could continue on with our deliberations. Please proceed. Identify yourself and proceed.
Chair and committee members, Nick Thompson, Deputy General Manager, Capital Projects for Metro Transit.
I'm Sarah Gondor. I'm the Director of the Office of Transit and Active Transportation for MnDOT.
And we'll start with public transportation for Met Council. This is representing both Met Council, Metro Transit, and our suburban transit providers. In the low and no emissions program, which is a competitive program, 2022, Southwest Transit received $8.1 million. In 2023, Metro Transit received $17.5 million matched with state IIJA match. That is for 12 electric buses and 12 chargers. Most of that funding is in contracts but not expended yet. 2023, Met Council received $239 million through the federal capital investment grant program for the Gold Line project. Gold Line project is under construction, will be open to customers next spring. The funding for the Gold Line federal grant is matched mostly with county, Washington and Ramsey County funds. There are some state bonding dollars in there for a bridge and then some local dollars for pedestrian improvements. The federal grant, $77 million, has been expended to date of that $239 million, and that's through December of last year. The next three lines are the formula funds that are received to the region that are distributed to all the transit providers in the region. This represents, with IIJA, a 30 to 35% annual increase over what was being received in the region prior to IIJA, so a significant investment increase from IIJA. These funds go through state of good repair, maintaining our existing infrastructure, replacing buses at the end of their life, maintaining facilities, public and support facilities. And so the funding you see on here is what we received in 2023. We anticipate in 2024 a similar dollar value, but we have not received that allocation yet from the FTA. Benefits through all of these are for the low and no emission, or for reduced energy consumption, reduce harmful emissions. We are in the early stages of electrification of our fleet, so we are using early purchases to learn about how they work. And then some of the funding does go to our workforce development for maintaining electric infrastructure and building a new skill force for our maintenance group. With IIJA and transit, there is a lot of competitive process competitive funding that we are seeking. Listing here are just four grants that are currently pending. The first one plans for another application for low and no emission grants. We have not determined what we're applying for yet. That will be this spring. And we anticipate it will be advancing our zero emission bus plan so another year. We have three projects tied around the Blue Line Extension Light Rail project that are competitive offer with our partners, either with Minneapolis for transit-oriented development planning or with Hennepin County for connecting communities and land use and other infrastructure that supports the development of the Blue Line Extension. All of those three with the amounts you see there are still pending. We would anticipate knowing the outcome of those later this spring.
Although there was no new transit formula programs introduced through IIJA, funding levels increased significantly in the first year. Fiscal year 2022, which we've highlighted in this table, you can see the difference between 21 and 22. You can see that the rural transit program grew by about 22%, the small urban program grew by 52%, and bus facilities grew by about 11%. There was less growth in fiscal year 2023, which ranged between 0 and 2%. For background, MnDOT administers bus and bus facility and rural transit formula grants in support of our 28 rural and 7 small urban transit systems in greater Minnesota. Funds are invested in both capital and ongoing operations. IIJA formula funding allows the state to maintain and improve transit service throughout greater Minnesota. In the calendar year of 2023, federal funding made up about 28% of the transit funds managed by the state for greater Minnesota. In terms of our discretionary programs, the primary FTA discretionary grant program for greater Minnesota is bus and bus facilities. And of that, $44.6 million of discretionary grants received by Minnesota agencies over the first 2 years, MnDOT was a recipient of $4.9 million. Other direct recipients, in addition to what the Met Council just mentioned, included some small urban systems and tribes. MnDOT, in partnership with rural transit agencies, was awarded low-no grants in both 22 and 2023. In 2022, $3.4 million to purchase 7 battery electric buses and charging infrastructure for four rural transit agencies, which included Heartland Express in New Ulm area, Southern Minnesota, Smart Transit in Owatonna, Prairie Lakes Transit in Fairmont area, and Minnesota River Valley Transit in St. Peter and Le Sueur. In 2023, we received $1.4 million to purchase 7 propane-fueled buses and supporting infrastructure for 2 rural transit agencies, which included Tri-Valley Opportunity Council, or Heartland Express, and Prairie Land Transit. So looking at future opportunities in 2024, we're considering application to purchase 7 propane-fueled buses for 2 rural transit agencies, in addition to development of bus facilities for 2 separate transit agencies. The NOFO on that was out February 8th, and those applications are due April 25th.
So, Director, can you talk about how does the funding that MnDOT is receiving, how does this overlap with the transit program that we have traditionally funded under the capital investment bill? Do they support each other? Or can you talk about that, please?
Yes, they support each other, as I mentioned, so that this funding, this formula funds, make up about 28%, and the rest of 72-ish percent is state and local funds.
And then to the MET Council, I think just going back to page 24, the last 3 bullet points for the formula funds, are these just for current projects, or can you use this for future projects too?
Chair and committee members, most of it is for current projects. We do have a 6-year CIP where we anticipate federal funding, and so we assign potential future formula funding to projects that are in the planning and engineering stage. But we do not put those projects out for bid or construction until we receive the formula funds. So it's the funding that you see here on the page is all allocated to projects that either started in 2023 or are about to start.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are there any plans for using future federal funds for unsnarling the Lafayette Bridge terminal?
Maybe this might be for MnDOT, or is it for the MET Council?
It's kind of a both, I think.
Chair, member, we, Metro Transit and MET Council, does not have any transit funds planned or anticipated for Lafayette. We do have transit operations that are intersect with that, but we don't have any transit funds targeted for that.
Representative Hanson.
Mr. Chair, and the reason I brought up this with the transit is way back when the first fix was done, there was supposed to be a transit lane on the bridge. Representative Lilly may remember that 10, 15 years ago. So if we are fixing it, there might be an opportunity for providing for transit.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question about those 3 formula lines as well. How are those allocated across the Metro Transit and the suburban transit systems?
Sure, Chair, committee member. We have a formula that's been agreed upon by all the transit providers that has been in place for several years. That's a formula that's based on, it depends on the program, but a combination of the number of miles of service that provided each year and age of fleet. It's allocated to Metro Transit, the 4 suburban providers, the U of M is a provider, and then our Metro Council contracted services, which includes Metro Mobility and Transit Link in addition to some fixed route. So those are all the providers that are part of the formula. And so that formula gets analyzed each year based on the data inputs that we've agreed to with all the providers, and is updated as services change to reflect the needs in the region.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that. Is part of the formula population, as I understand it? And if so, does that reflect the rapid growth in the, especially in the southern suburbs?
Chair, committee member, population, I believe, is one of the components in there, in existing service, frequency of service, miles. We'd be happy. It's a really lengthy formula, but we'd be happy to share that or talk with you offline with our group that designs that formula.
And then just going back to the MET Council, for those 3 formulas, can it be used for planning is that an allowable use or no?
Chair, the planning for individual projects, technically, or engineering, yes, it could be used for that. Like regional planning, like a system study, that would not be, these three would not be. There are other federal planning dollars that are available to the region that can be used for planning purposes.
So I know that Representative Carroll have interest in BRT on Highway 55. Can this be used for planning for that?
Chair, committee members, it would not, not for planning of that. We are not planning to use that. We did receive $3 million from the state last year, or that is for planning of that project. But once it gets to building a project, these funds would be typically used for after a project is built and when you need to replace a bus or fix a station that's been reached its end of life or damaged. That's where these formulas would be used for a project like a Highway 55 BRT. But we do have $3 million from the Met Council going towards Highway 55 in a planning phase.
Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for bringing that topic up. I was just going to ask to be recognized for that. So if you look at the transit map, you'll see there's projects on the east side. There's nothing on the west side, at least in the northwest portion. So that's a problem. I've been working on Highway 55 BRT since I was on City Council, and we'd sure like to see some progress made. And it's good to have some planning dollars, but we need more. And so we need to get it going as soon as possible. I think Representative Myers would agree. I think his area could benefit from it since he's right across the street from me. So I would encourage you to do as much as you can as fast as you can.
Sure. Chair, Committee, as a region, how we fund Highway BRT traditionally is because we have Red Line BRT, Highway BRT, Orange Line Highway BRT. That is a mix of county funds and federal. And so the current policy for Highway 55 would be we would engage Hennepin County as the local funder for Highway BRT, but we haven't had that discussion yet. They are part of the planning process, but that is how we've traditionally funded Highway BRT on the building of it, and then Metro Transit now is responsible for funding operations and capital maintenance of a Highway BRT. So that's something we should engage with the county also. And then because it's a MnDOT road, they would be a participant. Obviously, when we build a Highway BRT, MnDOT is also doing some other work. So those are parties that we would be engaged in development of Highway BRT on that corridor, or other corridors, other counties might be involved if it's a highway corridor that is in a county other than Hennepin.
Representative Carroll.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. So let's define what it means to have the county to be involved, because they've been at the table when I've been.
Yep. Representative Carroll, can you talk into the mic, please?
Sure. Can you define what it means for the county to be involved? Because as I said, I've been at the table with the county for a long time, along with Met Council and others. So what do you mean by that?
Sure.
Manager Thompson.
Committee member. So I'll talk about our history of the region, and it doesn't mean that's necessarily going forward. But the Highway BRTs has been the counties provide the local match to the federal funds. The local match usually is greater than 50% of the total project capital cost. And capital cost is planning, engineering, and construction. And so in our region, the existing Highway BRTs, where the counties have participated, they have used their local sales tax. That's how we've funded in the past. On future corridors, that is something that would have to be discussed, and the counties would have to, if the pattern continued forward, that's how they would be involved. They would fund the local share of the capital cost.
Representative Carroll.
Thank you. You know, maybe since Minneapolis has a local sales tax, that they could help fund it until and unless Plymouth gets one. But right now, we're not eligible for one.
Thank you, Representative Carroll. Thank you both for coming before us. Next on the agenda, we have Manager Wyman from MnDOT. Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank Thank you, Chair Lee, representatives. My name is Patrick Weideman. I'm the manager of the Capital Program and Performance section within the Minnesota Department of Transportation. So I'm going to walk through the road and bridge and major projects area. I want to specifically focus. We're going to break this down into the discretionary program and the allocated program from Federal Highway Administration. There is an important footnote on this slide. You will see that the amounts shown there represent the allocated amounts that come in IIJA. However, under the Federal Highway Administration programs, we are restricted annually to the amount of obligation authority that's provided in the congressional obligation bills as they go through Congress. Traditionally, that runs between 84 and 93% of the actual apportionment levels in IIJA. So let's start again with the IIJA discretionary awards, and I'm going to go only through the awards. Understand that there are quite a few programs within Road and Bridge. There's been a lot of applications, so I just focused on the awards. Starting at the top is Trunk Highway 197 and Paul Bunyan Drive. That's in Bemidji. Highway 19 in Marshall. I-90 bridge replacement in Austin. The Moorhead Rail grade separation. The Work Zone Safety. That's a joint project with the state of Colorado. Trunk Highway 27 is a Mississippi River Bridge grade separation in Little Falls, also grade separating from the rail. The Highway 210 Brainerd equity, safety, and multimodal connectivity through the corridor inside of Brainerd. A construction technology project and the I-535 Blatnick project, which is the most largest on that. I do want to point out that $529 million is Minnesota's share. The grant is actually for $1.58 billion, split 50-50 between the two states. So what you're seeing in that chart is Minnesota's share. And you roll those up, that's $647 million, and we are doing quite well as a state compared to other states in our size and et cetera in terms of the discretionary grants. This is just a summary table for the local government side, IIJA discretionary grants. Our office does track those. I do want to point out that the total comes to $204 million, and these are scattered off all across the state individually. And with a few exceptions, these are smaller in size. There are some few big ones, but for the most part, they are of smaller size. These are the actual grants themselves. I'm not going to go through them because there's a lot of them. If you have a questions regarding them, certainly we can come back to them. Some of them are local governments that we're just tracking, so specific questions to them, I'm not sure I can provide much on those. The anticipated benefits from the discretionary dollars. First and foremost, from the big one, the economic and quality life of the Duluth Superior area is going to be maintained and improved. That bridge is getting quite old, and so the replacement of the Blatnick Bridge represents a significant economic and obviously quality of life issue for both the states that it involves. Next on the list, community safety, economics, and quality of life improved in downtown Moorhead. We're doing a significant Moorhead grade separation project. That's one of those that you saw early on on the list. And that grade separation, it will allow for much more safe emergency access of vehicles to and from across the main BNSF in downtown Moorhead. In addition, as you could see, there were several pages of local projects that have received all across the state. A lot of these projects have been sitting on the winds awaiting for funding, and so the grants have given them an opportunity to do that. And so some very much probably badly needed but not necessarily funded projects are moving forward across the state. As I mentioned, we typically, in the allocated funding, we're going to switch to allocated funding now. Minnesota, we typically get between 85 and 92% of the spending. So If you're looking at our numbers in terms that I'm going to go through, they're not going to quite match the numbers on the first page, and this is why. It's because of how much we get from that obligated money. So this is a breakdown look of the whole IIJ road and bridge funding. You will see 75% of it went towards existing projects. 13% went for increases to existing programs that were already there underneath those existing projects. And 12% of the funding went to new programs that were within IIJA. Existing projects. Again, 75% of the money went to these projects. These are projects that across the state, both local and MnDOT, have been programmed into our State Transportation Improvement Program. They were planned for. We anticipated the continuation of the federal transportation bill. And so, as you know, it takes quite a while to deliver significant major road and bridge projects. We plan them ahead in our STIP, and these projects, again, we're anticipating on this funding when at the time we plan them. The program increases. 13% came in the key core areas that fund highway programs, with over three-quarters of that in the two programs specifically known as National Highway Performance Program, that's what NHPP stands for, and the Surface Transportation Block Grant Program, or SDBG. Significantly, this money is being used to cover increasing construction costs, particularly on our existing projects. It has allowed us to expand the scope of some work on our projects and to add a couple new projects into the program. But as you can see, when you look at the 13% across the life of IIJA, which is a six-year bill, it's not a lot of significant increase in the main program. The existing program increases are more specifically divided out in this pie chart. You see the NHPP there. It is over half of the increase. NHPP funds the main work on our national highway system, the interstates, and the main arterial highways across the state. STPG, that takes up almost another, you know, as you can see there, almost another little short of a quarter, or a little larger than a quarter. And that is what we use for the non-NHS roadways across the state, and it's also what our local partners use to program their major collectors. The other areas that received increase was the Congestion Mitigation and Air Quality Program, CMAQ. HSIP, that stands for the Highway Safety Improvement Program. And then there is an amount of money that comes to Minnesota in planning that is comes off that allows us to do additional planning across the state on our corridors, as well as development of the State Transportation Improvement Program and other things required to submit to receive federal funds. The new programs, 12% of the IIJ money did come to brand new programs that were in the bill. The new programs, of course, come with their own eligibility and a few other requirements to them. Two of the new programs are being funded from the general fund and are not from the Highway Trust Fund. Okay. Kind of breaking down those programs, you see the big green slice there. That is the Bridge Formula Program. That is over half of the new money. That program is specifically for the upgrade and replacement of bridges across the state. It is also one of the programs that is funded from the general fund. So going forward, as an agency, you know, we probably will not program that into the future until such time as we see from the feds that they're going to actually continue that program. It is, again, out of the general fund. You have the carbon reduction program. That's about 17% of the new program increase. The National Electric Vehicle, which was talked about earlier, that represented 11%. And the PROTECT program, that is 19%. And I should point out the other transfer from the general fund that's funded by the general fund is the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program.
So before you move on to yep. The bridge, Representative Erdahl, I have a question for the road portion of this. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and Director Weideman. Okay, so a lot of programs in here. We have the discretionary and funded. And how is it determined which projects are funded? Is this a federal determination or state, or how does this work?
So that is Chair Lee, Representative. That is a dimension of which of the programs we're talking about. Under the discretionary programs, the grants are selected nationally. They are a competitive process nationally against other states. And so those projects, like the Blatnik Bridge, were selected based off of a competitive process. The allocated funding here in Minnesota is distributed to MnDOT's 8 districts and to our 8 area transportation partnerships. Those two entities work together to, and we have a formula that has been worked through as an agency to distribute those resources. The ATPs and the MnDOT districts submit and develop their projects, program accordingly, and then deliver.
Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you. And that answers my question.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And follow up, so the 8 districts and your internal formula, is the internal formula developed based on geography or population?
Senator Waterman.
Representative, it is actually a mixture of geography, population, and a couple other factors that we use, some technical engineering factors. And we run the formula. That's for the MnDOT districts, and that's how it's divided for the MnDOT districts, is using that formula. For the locals on the ATPs, we use 50% of that is population, and the other 50% is their county bridge and road needs.
Representative Hansen.
And then, Mr. Chair, and then follow up, do you take into account disadvantaged communities? I know that with some IIJ money, I mean, other states may be looking at criteria like census tract information, poverty, a number of type of criteria in terms of targeting funds to go to lesser advantaged locations.
Manager Waterman.
Representative, in the national discretionary programs, several of them do actually have specific points or are actually required to be under consideration. In terms of the allocated funding, it's allocated a little differently. Several of those are not necessarily within the purview of that particular provision within IIJA. However, we do provide the information to the individual districts and ATPs, and that is information they can consider when they program the projects.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, so they can consider it, but they don't have to.
Measurer, whatever.
Chairman Lee, Representative, that is correct. Their discretion as they recommend the projects, and then as the projects come in, they're reviewed by MnDOT's Transportation Programming and Investment Committee and ultimately recommended to the Commissioner for final approval.
So just following up on that, then, do MnDOT use other metrics of measuring equity and whatnot for your formula programs?
Mr. Chair, within the individual districts and ATP, or excuse me, individual MnDOT districts, they can choose. We have the data available for them as they are developing their projects. It is a priority of us within our Minnesota State Highway Investment Plan to target areas like that. And so as we work forward trying to plan and program projects, that is one of the considerations that the districts do take when they're developing the projects.
And so currently, since you said it's optional, with all the districts right now, do they currently use different metrics to measure equity, or is it only certain regions that are currently using that as a metric right now?
Mr. Chair, the only tool we are providing for them right now is currently a tool provided by FHWA that does break it down by census tracts across the state.
And all districts are using that
metric? All districts have, Mr. Chair, all districts have access to it. As they are programming their projects, they have to take into a variety of considerations, particularly the performance of both the road and bridge as a condition factor. So sometimes you have to kind of provide a unique balance to all of those factors to ultimately determine the projects.
So right now, MnDOT doesn't track which region is using that tool, you're saying?
Mr. Chair, that is correct. We do not track.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick follow-up. Do you track the outcomes, even if you're not tracking the tools? Are you tracking how the awards are measuring up on an equity scale.
Mr. Chair, Representative, as this is relatively new, as we're running through the projects, we have not done that yet. I do suspect that going forward we will as an agency. We just are fairly new into IIJ. Many of the projects that, as I mentioned earlier, 75% of the funding was already programmed to pre-existing projects. So as we get closer towards the end of IIJA, we probably will start seeing more new projects start entering our program, which will probably provide us a different set of criterion to work from.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so is there a process in place that you'll use to design the process? They don't just, you know, I'm a process improvement nerd, so there you go.
Mr. Chair. Representative, I think you bring a good point. We will take that back as an agency and consider that. We don't have an identified process per se, but it's clear that, you know, we should probably have that written and be able to provide that for you.
Representative Scrava.
Good question, Representative Ryer. Chair and Commissioner, I've been involved on Highway 169 Task Force up in northern Minnesota. All this jargon we're throwing around, I've been part and parcel to. I've learned how everything is done, and it's quite complex. It's not as easy as you're saying. For most people listening, they may go, what? And it really is, in my opinion, very complex, because those eight engineers and eight ATP people that get in a room, they have 16 different personalities, and you get projects out of it. And then you have the criteria and everything. So it is vetted, I think, vetted pretty clear. But one of the questions I have is when you say Minnesota typically only receives between 85 and 92%, is that 15 to 18% administrative? Is that, you know, like Congressman Oberstar got us $25 million, we got $20 million. Federal Highway Administration took five. Is that what happens with this, or why is that number different? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it is a combination. It is partially that there is some administrative overhead that the agency needs. The other component of it is that Congress has lots of bold initiatives when they pass an authorization act, like IIJA. But when it comes time to actually funding it on an annual basis, they have to trade that off against other priorities at the federal level. And so traditionally, since the passage of ICE-T in 1991, they've just never been able to do 100%.
Right.
Representative Scrava.
No, that's all. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. So you can proceed to the bridge.
One of the other new programs is the Bridge Formula Program. It represents over half of the new program funding we did receive. There have been a total of an additional 134 highway bridges that are now planned into our program between now and fiscal year 2028 as a result of this new program. And so all the funds in it have been planned out all the way to 2028, but we were happy that we could get nearly 134 bridges replaced. Another one of the new programs is the Carbon Reduction Program. There's $96 million for carbon reduction. MnDOT, we're still currently working in conjunction with our local partners to program projects for this. It was a new program. It has some distinctive priorities to it. And so as such, we are taking some time, and we have an office that's been working very hard to specifically prioritize what and where these projects should come in at. And so we have not at this time planned out those funds, but it is scheduled to go into our new STIP coming up in the 2025 to 2029 State Transportation Improvement Program. Some major projects. When we did get that little bit of additional funding to the existing programs, I did talk about we did get a chance to add a few projects. The first one was a significant concrete overlay on Interstate I-90 in the southwest corner of the state. It's quite long. And so that was one of the first areas we put some of the money. The next is at I-535. That's in Duluth, Superior. It's at the 535-35 intersection, sometimes referred to as the Twin Ports Interchange. And we were able to advance work packages 3 and 4 on that interchange redesign. Again, we have the additional 134 bridges. I pointed out in this slide, there are a couple significant components here. One is I-394 over Dunwoody. And you'll note there are another 33 individual bridges that are related to just that bridge replacement alone. Also, we had a couple smaller major projects, Highway 10 and 169, had some freight mobility improvements. And we had the Highway 13 port access improvement. Our anticipated benefits from the IIJA allocated funding, our road and bridge construction projects that we already have planned by both MnDOT and the local governments, they're going to continue. They have that additional continued funding. The increased funding in our core program is assisting both us and our local governments to deal with inflation from increasing costs as well as additional discovery of scope and issues on the projects. Our statewide aging bridges are getting addressed thanks to that bridge formula program. That was a significant help for us to get to our bridges. And the new carbon reduction program, once it's up and running, it's going to provide an opportunity to add an additional $100 million approximately of carbon reduction projects across the state as well.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the carbon reduction program, is that EV charging stations, or is that E85 pumps? Is it biofuels? Is it design? What is the carbon reduction program?
Manager?
Mr. Chair, Representative. The carbon reduction program has some fairly big criteria on it. It can include all the way up to purchasing vehicles, electric vehicles from it, as well as doing simple things as a J-turn to avoid putting in an additional signal for delays. The criterion of the carbon reduction program is quite big. If you want specifics, I'd have to give back to you. I haven't dug into all that's eligible.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would that also potentially include green infrastructure? So MnDOT has a lot of property. And trees and prairie and habitat along rights-of-ways. Is that something that's eligible?
Manager?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'll have to look. I do not remember specifically if that part is eligible or not, but we can certainly get back to you on that one.
Representative Ryer?
I have the same question.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
So last on the agenda, we have Mr. Sorensen to come and talk about safety from MnDOT.
So, Mr. Chair, just by way of overview, $30.2 billion available to states in the area of safety under the IIJA, roughly $500 million in projected IIJA allocations and awards to Minnesota to date. I think, importantly, many of the programs listed on the right of the slide fall under the purview of MnDOT, and you'll hear about today. There are a few that fall under the Department of Public Safety, and we can get those specific answers back to you just in the interest of keeping the day moving. We just brought the agency that was most applicable to the category.
Sounds good. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Brian Sorensen, State Traffic Engineer with the Department of Transportation. So as Micah mentioned, we're going to focus a little bit on the HSIP program, the Highway Safety Improvement Program, which is the majority of the formula dollars under safety. And then also I mentioned the Safe Streets and Roads for All program, which is geared the same way as HSIP to help local agencies reduce fatalities and serious injuries on the roadway system. The state is not eligible for those funds, but I'll share what I know, what's going on in Minnesota. So under the HSIP, the Highway Safety Improvement Program, this is a core federal program with the purpose of reducing fatalities and serious injuries on our roadway system. MnDOT has been funding both proactive and reactive safety solutions through this program since it was established as part of Safety Lou back in 2005. And so under the proactive, systematic type of projects category, projects that we have funded over the years include cable medium barrier, enhanced pavement markings, rumble strips, curb delineation, shoulder paving. And then when you think about the reactive project side, where we're focusing on locations that we know have crash issues, then the types of solutions you often see funded through this program include roundabouts, J-turns, geometric changes to the road. So right now in Minnesota, about 70% of our fatal and serious injury crashes happen on the local roadway systems. Fatalities themselves are split about 50-50, state and local. But when you take into account the serious injury crashes, about 70% are on the local system. So Minnesota has for years shared these funds with local agencies. Not all states do that. But right now we're at about 63% of these funds being shared with local agencies through a local agency solicitation. So we run a number of solicitations to distribute these funds. We have a solicitation for the seven greater Minnesota districts in MnDOT, and then we also have a local agency solicitation yearly for greater Minnesota. And then in the Metro runs a solicitation every 2 years that runs in conjunction with the regional solicitation that the Met Council provides. So that's how these funds are distributed. Right now, Mr. Chair, about 85% of the HSIP funds through IIJA are programmed in one way, shape, or form. And as Patrick mentioned, you know, many of those projects were already lined up even before IIJA was passed, just because of the time that it takes to implement some of these projects. Ballpark, over the 5 years of IIJA, we're looking at about $260 million for HSIP. So that puts us at, what, about 210, 220 that are programmed. So a few of the challenges. As we know, traffic safety, of course, is a huge priority for all states across the country and for FHWA. Right now, the IIJA funding only constitutes about 6% of the authorization. So I think it's important to keep in mind that we need to be implementing safety solutions through these other programs that we're talking about here today, through the other areas of the bill. And that's going to continue to be the case moving forward. Another challenge with HSIP, and I talked about sharing the funds with the local agencies, many local agencies aren't set up to navigate the federal process. So it takes extra time. It takes kind of a know-how of what you need to do. And so many local agencies that could take advantage of these funds and have safety issues that need to be addressed and don't have the resources to address them don't even apply for the funding because they can't navigate the process. And so big picture, again, $260 million is a fair amount of funding, but in terms of the need, it's pretty small. And so what we have to do is focus on the types of solutions that we get the most bang for our buck for. So the highest benefit, lowest cost solutions. And oftentimes that doesn't include active transportation types of solutions. We do fund active transportation solutions through the program, but again, we're not getting to a lot of the needs, which does fit with the Safe Streets and Roads for All program, so I'll talk about that in a minute. That does help supplement this, but it is a challenge when we're looking at just HSIP by itself. A few of the opportunities we have going on right now, we are updating our Strategic Highway Safety Plan for Minnesota, and that will provide some guidance on what our biggest issues are across the state and the strategies that we prioritize to address those issues. That'll help guide us in selecting safety projects moving forward. And then we're also working with our MnDOT districts and the counties that are willing to assess their systems specifically, again, to look at where their issues are and what types of solutions are going to be most effective to deal with their highest priority safety issues. MnDOT is going through a safe system implementation assessment, so I'm not sure if the members have heard of safe system. But it is kind of a new philosophy across the country that takes into account the fact that we know people are going to behave in ways that they shouldn't. how do we set the road system up in a way that's more forgiving? So with our TZD program in Minnesota, we are working on the cultural side and the behavior side, but we also need to know, we also understand that those behaviors aren't going to instantly change. And so can we make changes to the roadway system that will mean people are not dying or having their lives instantly change when they make some of these mistakes? So I mentioned the Safe Streets and Roads for All program, and that's a program that states are not eligible to apply for. It's directed to local agencies, to tribes, and to MPOs. There's about $5 billion nationwide. This is a competitive program with the same purpose, to reduce fatalities and serious injuries across the system. We are assisting local agencies who ask. I mentioned the county safety plans. We are working with the counties that are willing to set up their safety plans in a way that meets the action plan requirement of the SAFE system, the Safe Streets and Roads for All, which will help position them to apply for the implementation funding. And there have been, I think we're at about 18 different agencies across the state that have received close to $4 million on Safe Streets and Roads for All on the planning side. And an exciting award we learned of in December was Minneapolis received $20 million through this program. They're already well situated with their Vision Zero program and plan. And so they will be taking advantage of $20 million from this program in the coming years. With that, I'll stand for questions, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Sorensen. Thank you. So we have the Safe Routes to School kind of program that we do, and then, you know, so you've been talking about safe streets and roads for all, and then this safety system approach. Just seems like the Safe Routes to School, you know, would fit in so many places. Are they similar or are they dissimilar, or can we add that to what we do as a state for Safe Routes to School? But I mean, in greater Minnesota, and I mean, probably more so, the schools are on, I imagine, on highways, and more so than we have in the, I mean, I can think even in my own district, they're fairly close, so.
Yep.
Mr. Sorensen.
Mr. Chair, Representative. We in Minnesota, we have a Safe Routes to School program that we administer. And so schools are eligible and cities are eligible to apply for those funds. And certainly it could be the same types of solutions. So I think local agencies they have more options now, more places to go to. They could apply for the same projects in multiple categories to try to improve their chances of gaining funds to address those safety issues.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so they could apply for that, like the $5 billion. Because you're saying locals and some of the...
Mr.
Sorensen. Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative, they have... There's a requirement there that you need that I've been alluding to, that the local agencies have to assemble an action plan. So they have to assess their system to identify their issues, and they have to work through a public engagement process to do that as well. So there's a little requirement there for the Safe Streets and Roads for All program that they wouldn't have if they're applying for safe routes to school funds through the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
So, question for you, maybe for you, Director Intermill. So, the second bullet points, many local agencies are not set up to navigate the federal process. And so, is this where we could expect that your office will help out these local communities with this particular grant, or will MnDOT be more appropriate to help them?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a good question, and I think it's actually representative of a larger challenge and a point that I had alluded to on Monday, and sort of the term of art that has bubbled up is federal funds fatigue, which, as someone who has worked in government for the last 20 years, largely at the state and local level, it's like for so long we were looking for help from the federal government, and then it all came at once. And because of some of the emergency nature, as I mentioned, of CARES and ARPA, there were a lot of changing requirements. And now you've got local units and others who are afraid that that's sort of the same situation they're in now. And so there's hesitance to apply for these dollars. The state did appropriate monies last year through MnDOT for the area of transportation for local communities to be able to hire consultants to help put together applications. There's also technical assistance needed on some of the reporting. And there are other partners, such as League of Minnesota Cities has funds available. So there is a network of options. I think what my team, one of the items we're here to do is to help. And had a conversation with Minneapolis Foundation and R.T. Ryback actually mentioned sort of painting the full picture of what's possible, what are the full menu of options so that locals are better able to access these opportunities. So the short answer is, while my team won't be providing direct assistance on navigating the federal process, what we're here to do is to help connect folks with resources so that they're better positioned.
Sounds good. And then maybe more for Mr. Sorensen. So, and just I think your first few slides, this reminds me of visiting Chair Lilly's district with Highway 36, and I think was it 120. And so I'm just curious, you know, the projects like that are coming to us for funding, are they being considered right now with like the funding that you have in the HCIP program, or where do they fall? Why are we seeing projects like this that I feel like, you know, personally fits into programs like this? Why are they coming straight to us and not through the programs that MnDOT have?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, you know, I would guess part of that is because of the size and scope of some of these projects. So I'm not familiar with what the solution would be at the location you're talking, but, you know, HCIP is big picture. It's not a lot of funding available. And we do, as I mentioned, try to gear it towards proactive, systematic solutions because it best reduces the risk of fatalities and serious injuries for the dollars that we spend. So it's not a good place to go to, unfortunately, for larger system changes. They're typically smaller projects.
Okay. Well, you know, I think, you know, not to you two, but just more of a comment, I think that this is where, you know, for MNB in general and representing the governor's recommendation, I think it will be helpful for us to kind of figure out where are all these programs and how do we better connect. And maybe we are doing that. I don't know. So that we can lessen the pressure of requests coming to the state so that we can fully fund our, you know, state requests as we, you know, plan our budgets going forward. And so hopefully MNB and all of our agencies, you know, start thinking through that. How could we connect local communities through current programming so that we could build a robust bill that will actually address some of our state-owned assets? So, members, before we adjourn for today, I do want to adopt the minute. And so, Vice Chair Ryer, do you have a motion to adopt the minutes from February 19th? Thank you, Mr. Sorensen, and thank you, Director.
Chair Lee, I move approval of the minutes for February 19th, 2024.
Vice Chair Ryer moves approval of the minutes for February 19th. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. Members and testifiers, I just want to say thank you all for being here. Our next hearing is on Monday, February 26th. It will be focused on federal IIJA environment-related and broadband funding opportunities with regards to clean energy and power, broadband, environmental remediation, resiliency, water, and others. With that, the meeting is adjourned.